You're not sick, Amelia, no.
No?
No, you're a little farsighted.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy the show.
Hey everybody, welcome to this first episode of the Skate or Die podcast. Skate or Die Festival is coming up in less than a month, and we've got some promotional stuff going on. Specifically, I wanted to talk to some of the filmmakers and musicians and sponsors and everybody awesome that's involved with this festival. And so myself and members of my team are going to interview folks both in written form over on the website as well as here on podcasts, maybe even a few videos, and get that up so you can learn a little bit more about all the awesome people involved in Skate or Die. We hope you can come on out if you're in the greater Philadelphia area in early October, the 7th and 8th to be exact. But if you're not local and you want to support, you can check this stuff out. You can stay tuned for after the festival. We're going to have whatever merch is left that we don't sell. We're going to put that up for sale so you can totally support in that way. Or we're going to have a Patreon with online screenings and a bunch of other stuff kind of after we get done with this first festival and start doing some other fun stuff leading up to next year and future events. So really, really excited. And for our first little promotion here, it's more than a little. It's actually a pretty big name, big wig director in Nacho Vigalondo.
Nacho!
Nacho was kind enough to speak to me for quite a while, and I'm sure he'll talk to me again. He's just a nice gentleman who enjoys talking about movies, and and he reached out to us when he saw we were playing the Profane exhibit, the long lost film that no one thought was ever going to come out, that he did an awesome segment for. We talk a little bit about that. We talk a little bit about, you know, him, and we just got to rap a little while, and I really enjoyed it. Nacho Vigalondo, you can just pretend it's not me and listen for him, because he does a bunch of talking and he's way more interesting than me. And even though he was very concerned about how his English was, I thought he was pretty damn easy to understand. So, here's Nacho Vigalondo. And you can check out more about the Skate or Die Festival at skateordiefestival.com, hosted by The Farsighted, this podcast network, this website that you're listening to right now. Thanks a lot. Have a wonderful day. And enjoy the show.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you good. Can you hear me?
Sorry, dude. I'm so sorry.
Don't even worry about it. I already had to move you yesterday, so it's par for the course, right? We all have lives. I get it.
I fall asleep completely. I took a nap after. Yeah, I'm working these days. I'm trying to finish an outline and writing, and okay. I tend to eat the night.
I got you.
I'm a night owl. I was awake. I had lunch and everything. I took a really deadly nap, and
I understand, man. I understand. No worry at all.
You shouldn't understand. You shouldn't allow this.
Oh no, it's okay. I'm a father of a couple kids, so I need those naps to survive. I get it.
I'm not a father. I shouldn't be allowed to feel this way.
It's okay.
Writing is easy. It shouldn't be this. It shouldn't spiral me into chaos this way.
So yeah, thanks for talking for a few. So just a little background. I'm starting a new film festival this year called Skate or Die, and it's at a roll.
The first one.
This is actually our first year. Okay. I've been involved with a handful of other festivals, and my other crew have done a bunch of festivals in the everywhere from Philadelphia to
New York, San Francisco, because we're kind of all over the place, or have been in the past, but we're all kind of in the greater New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania area now. But yeah, so my wife is a roller derby skater, and her team runs the rink that they're, yeah. So my team, her team runs the rink. And so when they started running the rink, I said to them, hey, when the pandemic's starting to wind down, I'm going to run a film festival here. Cause I think it'd be really cool to have a film festival at the roller rink. And they were like, okay, so that's what we're doing.
That's amazing.
especially
these days, especially these times, there are never enough festivals.
Yeah, I really wanted to make the festival something that's not just the same as everybody else. So like we're doing everything from, I mean, we have roller skating and live music and movies, obviously. And and that's why I'm reaching out to you, because one of the movies we're playing is the long lost, nobody thought it was ever going to come out, Profane exhibit.
Yeah. That's crazy.
And so it just debuted in Buffalo, New York, I guess, a few weeks ago now. And I think we're going to be the second or third. Right now, I think we're second on the schedule unless somebody else pops up in the next few weeks. So, you know, I've worked with Steven Biro a bazillion times on other stuff. And I reached out to him and said, hey, I'm still looking for a late night movie. So something gory. And that's why I thought of you. And he said, ooh, I have Profane Exhibit ready. And I was like, what? And so it was like a dream for me, because I've been following this crazy movie for what now, 13 years since it was announced and a decade since it got shelved. And
oh, I mean, 13 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, I was looking at your filmography and realizing like you made this film long before a lot of stuff that's been out now, you know?
Yeah. You know, when you see like an old photograph of you.
Yeah.
An old photograph of yours and it always feels weird. Like, yeah. Oh my God, what's with my hair? Like, it's like I wasn't aware of having that aspect back then. Right. And when you think about something that you shot, it's equally weird. Like, yeah. I haven't had the chance to see the short film in a long time. I'm really curious about how it holds the time. But this is weird, because I'm talking about something like buried in the past, and at the same time, something that is going to get released today. So
Right. Yeah, it is crazy.
It's a crazy experience. Yeah.
So, I mean, I was first familiar with your work soon after this was supposed to originally come out. You were on ABC's A Death. And that came out, I think, in the year this was actually supposed to come out, or a year later or something like that.
Yeah.
And that was where I first got to know your work a little bit. I've seen, you know, Time Crimes and Colossal being a pretty big, big film for you. I think a lot of people probably heard your name for the first time with Colossal.
Yeah.
So you've been kind of doing a lot of stuff. I see you doing a lot of television and stuff since then. You know, what's been keeping you busy lately?
Oh, the last thing that I been involved is another horror anthology.
Okay.
It's crazy as it is. I have this kind of, through the years, I made this bunch of feature films who are never like pure horror.
Okay.
They are never gory. They don't represent this specific brand of cinema.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have this kind of secret, small, micro filmography that is my participation in horror anthologies.
Yeah.
And I mean, the ABCs of Death and the Profane Exhibit, VHS.
Yeah, Viral. VHS. Oh, I love your short in VHS. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like I have this other personality that is dealing with. Like more traditional slash stream horror.
Right.
And the last thing that I did is aligns with that. It's an episode, it's a 1 hour episode that I made for this Spanish anthology called Historias para no dormir, which means stories to keep you awake, which is like a reboot of a really popular legendary series that we had here in the 60s.
Okay.
Under the military regime, under the leadership, and now they're making this remake, and Amazon is going to is hosting the series. Actually, this is the second season, and I have this participation in the second season. It's a story called The Alarm, and it's another horror take on the people trapped in a house because the rain, the constant rain, the everlasting rain outside can kill you. So you have to keep, you have to stay inside, and something happens because at the center of the dinner table, there's this super weird pyramid floating in the middle of the object, and no one seems to perceive it. So something spooky is happening. So it's more like a mystery film rather than a horror film, but yeah, somehow it sticks with my this kind of a B road that I take.
Yeah,
in which I allow myself to be a full horror filmmaker, which is weird because if I haven't done a horror feature film, it's because it hasn't happened. It's not my wheel. There's a bunch of projects that I've been trying through the years, and some of those are pure horror.
Yeah,
but you never know. I'm not one of those filmmakers who have full control of their careers. So it's funny that each time that I write something that you can call pure horror is always as part of an anthology.
It is interesting that your horror work is mostly from anthologies. That's definitely an interesting thing. I mean, I definitely think, like, you know, your features, while they're not horror films per se, they definitely have a horror feel to them. I mean, Colossal gets very dark. Time Crimes has some nice gory moments in it, you know. So clearly horror is something that even when you're not doing full-on horror, it's part of you.
Yeah, some people, for example, claim that I'm related to comedy, like, because there's comedy in everything that I do.
Oh, sure.
But if you visit my flat, if you come here, you'll see that if you take a look at myself, it's mostly horror.
Yeah.
From since I was a child. I don't know. I feel that you can make a great comedy while being formally flat. You can make a masterpiece of a comedy whose language is kind of normal, kind of... I can give you a lot of examples, but I don't think I need. But if you make an amazing horror movie, that means that the language of the movie has to be stellar. Like you cannot make a horror movie that is based on the script, on the acting, or the VFX. You also need the language of the movie. You also need the form. You need the grammar of the movie to be amazing. And that's something that I particularly like about horror. You have to push everything in terms of the lighting, the editing, the framing, all the aspects that you can put together in a movie and make a movie. Each one of those have to be amazing if you want to make a great horror film.
Yeah,
and that's something that I love from the genre.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I love genre film as a whole, you know, horror, sci-fi, action, but like horror is where I tend to gravitate to as well. And so, you know, naturally putting together a film festival, I did it in October and I made it a horror film festival because why wouldn't I, right?
As I told you, it's never enough. We need you guys. We need you, especially these days when a movie can get buried in a platform forever and getting no attention. Film festivals are probably sometimes the only chance that we'll have to test the movie in front of a real audience.
Well, and like you were saying with doing like segments for anthologies, you know, it's very related to the idea of like short films. And short films, in my experience, they really don't get the love they deserve, you know? And so film festivals is one of the big places that I've only really gotten, one of the only places I've really gotten to experience short films in a good way. And I that's one of my favorite things about going to film festivals or covering them from one of the websites I write for or any of that stuff is that that's how I get to experience some of those great shorts. And some of my favorite releases of the last several years have been shorts. I mean, you know, I really love some of them.
And then there's a reason for that. I mean, the big scene, the big flaw of the short films, if you will, is that sometimes they are made by people who are just starting. That is the bad side, because me included, when you're making short films in your early age, you're just trying yourself. You're trying to find yourself. You're trying to educate your voice. You're trying to become somewhere. So you're half in the way into becoming a real filmmaker. So sometimes I understand the short film, some of those can be like, okay, I can see something coming through, but not still yet. But on the other half, the blessing of the short films is that if you're making a movie that is less than 1 hour, if you get to make that film, if that movie gets to happen, there's a huge chance that you're going to be completely free while doing it. Mm. You're going to be completely free. You're going to be unhinged. You will not get eyes. You won't get eyes like over your shoulders checking what you do, because no one cares.
Yeah.
And
so it's a good and bad thing. Like, you might not have many eyes on it, but you also get to do what you want.
You get to be crazy. You're not scared of taking a step back in your career or something. You're like free of concerns. And I'm talking about the concerns that sometimes like lower the quality of what you do because you have to satisfy too many eyes.
That's awesome. That's a great way to put it. I really like that because I think you see, I'm not saying there aren't times where someone reeling people in is a good thing, because there are, but overall, you know, studio interference is not usually for the positive of the creative process, right? You know, so, you know, you get to see people really do what they want when they either have that cachet because they've been doing it so long, or because they're doing something that's more for the independent world or something like that. And I agree. I think that's why I gravitate towards lower budget independent film myself, is because I get to see the artist's idea, their actual, what they want, not just what the studio is trying to show me.
Yeah. I don't want to imply that the studios are always the bad guys here.
Oh, of course not. Yeah.
I don't think that is the case, but when you are making a feature film, you have to satisfy a lot of demands, a lot of concerns. Sometimes when I see the eyes over your shoulder, I also should imply that sometimes you have yourself, you put a lot of eyes over your shoulder, like in your brain.
Yeah.
Like you're also in the state of, okay, I don't want to fuck this. I don't want to make something that is going to put everything at risk. I don't want something that will make people think that I'm too crazy or too adventurous. I don't want people to feel like these are my political ideas. I don't want people to feel that these are my flaws and everything. Like when you make a feature film, sometimes you yourself, you set expectations for yourself. So we have producers inside the brain sometimes.
Sure. I see that. And my
ultimate statement is that you have to fight against those fake producers' eyes that you can feel over your shoulder when you're making a feature film. Like, it's part of your duty, it's part of your labor to get rid of those insecurities.
Right.
But that is just half of the insecurities that are going to be around your project, because people dealing with the financial aspect of your movie, they have the concern. So when they offer me something like a participation in ABCs of Death, VHS Viral, Profane Exhibit, it's like, okay, I'm going to make something that it shouldn't make me feel afraid of anything. I'm gonna be free to be myself. And because all the other names involved in the movie are really amazing, I don't think I'm going to break the movie if I do a poor job. So okay, let's be free. Let's be brave.
Well, and I definitely think your short, and I don't, you said you haven't watched it in a long time, so I don't know how much you even remember it totally, but your short in your segment in Profane Exhibit is one of the most creative. I really love that. The anthology is very varied in that you have some really extreme stuff, and you have some stuff that's maybe not quite extreme, but still kind of gory and you kind of hit that gory without getting maybe off the cuff, off the rails a little bit. I mean, we have, you know, looking at the kind of the people involved with it, you know, at the time that it was being put together initially, you know, people like you and Anthony de Blasi, who've gone on to make a really strong name in the genre, were lesser known, you know, at that point. And then you look, you had guys like Marion Dora, who's known for these crazy German expressionistic gore films,
yes,
you know, and then you got like Uwe Boll, you know, doing a short, you know, so you have like the most, you know, you have some bigger names that were like notorious names, you know, and Diodato. I mean, you know, Diodato to be involved is crazy.
Yeah.
And it just shows how long the movie's been in this post-production hell. And when you have a guy like Ryan Nicholson, who passed away like 5 years ago, you know, and his short is in this. And I mean, and it's crazy because, you know, he's been gone, I don't know, 4 or 5 years already. And he has a segment in this. And Ryan, who everyone I know who's worked with him, the sweetest guy in the world, even if his films are nasty, nasty films. He, you know, it's a shame, it's like, you know, we lost
it's like a time capsule. It's like a We Unburied the Time Capsule.
It is. It's very much a time capsule, yeah.
That's amazing.
Do you remember how you got involved in that project?
Oh, yeah, I got an email from the producers. From Amanda Manuel and I'm sorry, what's the name of the other producer? And it was
Amanda's the one who I know of as well. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I said yes. I feel like I was really surprised because I'm not the kind of director that you relate to stream horror or to like horror that tries to test your limits as a viewer. I'm not related to that as a director. I can relate to that as a viewer. I love the idea of extreme horror because I've seen that is fucking difficult to do.
Yeah.
Like making extreme, some people, I remember that maybe by the time the movie, by the time my segment got made, I remember that this terminology was out there, torture porn.
And this was right around the time that was at a tight, I feel like, or kind of at the end of a tight, you know?
Yeah, because it was mainly because of Hostel, the Eli Roth film. Torture porn became a derogatory sense, a derogatory term. Like it was a negative thing to apply to a movie. Okay, this is torture porn. Right. And I remember that's the name changes, but I can see through the years that gore, extreme gore, splatter, torture porn, they all have this kind of negative vibe, depending on the place where you hear the thing. But
sure.
The negative vibe is always there. And I always feel that you have no idea how difficult it is to make something that is shocking.
Right.
Because each year, the definition of shocking changes. What was shocking 20 years ago is not shocking at all today. So you have to come up with something new constantly. And it's really, really difficult to make something that is going to make you drop your jaw. It's when someone finds a way to do it, he got all my praise.
Yeah.
Because, for example, I was one of the guys who really, like, became a really huge defender of the human centipede. Because, A, it was a perfectly constructed film. It was like a mini Hitchcock TV episode. Like, all the pieces were set in a perfect way. Like, the movie worked like a clockwork engine. And the other thing is that the human centipede itself, the invention that gets the movie the title from, this contraption, like, you need to have a specific imagination to come up with something like that to shock people. That
it's is like a really fucked up Rube Goldberg machine, right? You know?
Yeah. it's like we're going to get like an idea like this, like once every 10 years. Like, it's really difficult to make something that is going to push your boundaries. The same with Gaspar Noé's Irreversible.
Sure.
Like, I got angry at that movie the first time I saw it. I felt like I was in college and I was like, okay, I'm against this film because I feel there's something evil here. And I had this physical reaction against the movie. But 2 hours later, I realized that, okay, you haven't felt this way in all your life. You don't remember the last movie that made you feel this way. This is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
It's really difficult. It's like shock value is something that changes through the years, and it's a fish really difficult to catch.
Yeah, well, I'm completely agree with you there. For me, like, one of the things that's crazy is like, I think there's a lot of films that can be shocking, but some of them can also be really affecting in like a lasting way. So like, I think like Irreversible is a good example of a movie that it's shocking, but it's not just for shock's sake. Like, they're shocking you, but it's also telling you an important story, you know?
Let me make a point. Even if it shocks you per se, it's not easy.
Oh no, I know. Yeah.
I mean, like, I appreciate what you say. Like, yeah, if the shocking element is huge, and it turns you upside down, it's okay. And if there's a meaning behind it, there's a theme.
Sure.
There's always there's something that we also have to celebrate, because a movie with a theme is like it's like a more tasty pie. Like, a theme.
Yeah.
I'm not implying that movies need to have a theme, but when a movie has a theme, it's like you feel satiated. Like,
yeah.
It's like a really. It's like. You you leave the theater the same way you leave a huge dinner. Like, you feel like you need to go to sleep. So theme is interesting, but even if there's no theme, like a string gore that is able to shock you is unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there too. I mean, I'm a very staunch. You know, you said you became a defender of Human Centipede. I'm a big defender of Serbian film, and a lot of people think I'm crazy. And full disclosure, I'm a pastor's kid and a Bible believing Christian. So, for me to defend Serbian film is like, people are like, wait, what? But
what is the contradiction? I don't see the contradiction at all.
I'm with you. I don't see the contradiction either. So that's you're on the same wavelength with me, but. Especially here in America, the church is often very associated with a conservative view on things like horror. I'm not.
Yeah.
In fact, I think horror as a genre tackles the darkness in man and the grandiose ideas of faith in the best ways of any genre. I love religious horror. I know that you've played in that pool, you know, a little bit. So
a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I was raised a Catholic, so I know perfectly what you do. I mean, my first experience with horror, if you're a raised Catholic child, a Catholic raised child, sorry. You can be, especially in the early 80s, there's a huge chance that you're going to learn about stories from the Bible, especially not the Bible, but the death of some saints. We have that tradition of how saints get killed, how saints get tortured, how saints become martyrs. Some of those stories are not in the Bible, and it's part of the folklore of a specific country. And those stories are always gory as hell. And probably I saw those images before. I remember seeing some of my favorite horror films.
That's you're not wrong about that. The Bible doesn't shy away from gore.
I'm not even talking about crucifixion. There's some story about some saints like being burnt alive, like in a human sized barbecue. Like they put this saint and he was burned to death. And
wow.
And you can read how his eyes just went out, how his eyes melted. I got told by this from my church. Not the church exactly, but the catechesis, the thing that we got on Saturdays.
Yeah. We call it CCD here. CCD, it's catechism class and something. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
CCD.
Yeah.
Sounds cooler than catechesis.
I grew up in a little Italian Catholic town. So while I grew up a pastor of a American Baptist pastor, a child of an American Baptist pastor, the vast majority of my friends were involved in the local parish. And so I spent a lot of time at the local parish with my friends at their youth programs and stuff like that. So I'm very well aware of a lot of how the Catholic church operates. So at least here in America.
Are you familiar with probably you heard about this, the Sitges Film Festival?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Oh, the Sitges Film Festival. My friend Angel Sala is the director of that event, and he traveled the year he showed with a German a Serbian film.
Okay.
Yeah, Bosnian something. My brain. Sometimes Really, so he was the year he showed with the Serbian film in that festivals. He got called into justice. Like he got into real trouble. Like some associations wanted to take him to a trial.
Wow!
Because of the content of the movie and the way the content was described was they were describing the movie as it was a documentary, which was weird. If you see the movie, it's a moral tale. It's a movie in which you pay for your sins. I mean, a Serbian film. It's extreme visually, but thematically, it's not I wouldn't say it's a conservative film, but it's a movie with a moral, with a really firm moral. So, the problem is when people judge stuff because of what they see in a frame instead of understanding the whole thing. It's always the same.
I was just curious. Have you gotten a chance to see any of the other segments of Profane Exhibit besides your own?
Not yet. No, any of them. No, once I see
we got to make sure you get a copy of that from Biro then, man, because you got to check that stuff out. It's crazy. Your segment on, I'm not just saying this because we're talking, but it is one of my favorites in the film.
Thank you so much.
And like I said, it stands out. It's unique.
The way I remember my short film, because I remember the story, the premise and everything. And I don't want to see it again. I want to wait until the whole thing is packaged in front of me. Have you seen this stellar TV series from HBO Max called The Rehearsal by Nathan Fielder?
No, I haven't. I've heard of it, but I have not seen it.
But I was already a big fan of Nathan Fielder. I was already like a devoted fan of him. And he made this series about, it's not fiction. It's dealing with the fact that you don't know what's fiction and what isn't from what you see. Mm. And he's offering this service to like real people in United States. Yes, like, okay, if you want to do something, if you have something important in your life ahead of you, like a delicate conversation with your father or a breakup with your actual girlfriend, or you want to ask for a salary, when you want your salary to be bigger, how do you call this?
A salary rise.
So if this is a delicate thing for you, you can rehearse the whole thing with actors and in a set and everything. So they go to the lengths of building a whole bar, a fake bar, because in that bar, you're going to have a conversation that is really delicate with a friend in a week. So it's crazy because they build this huge contraption in order to to work as a rehearsal place for you to rehearse a little conversation with an actress. So it's kind of ridiculous. It's pointless because if you want to rehearse how you break up with your girlfriend, no one needs to build a whole bar for you. No one needs to build a whole replica of your house for you to sit there in front of an actress pretending to be your girlfriend so you can repeat the situation again and again. And that series is brilliant. It's one of the best, probably one of the, is the best piece that you'll see this year.
I'll check that out for sure, yeah.
It always has this crazy premise that gets broken again and again. Like the premise, the type of series transforms like from episode to episode, and it's always shocking and surprising. And I was watching that and it's like, oh my God, hold on. This is kind of my episode for Profane Exhibit, because this guy has built an stage for this guy to reproduce something in the past so he can be punished. And right. So it's the same, it goes in the opposite way, but it's the same kind of ridiculous. Like,
That's an interesting, when people see your segment, I think they'll see that kind of connection for sure.
Yeah, it's like I remember there's a fourth wall stage that gets broken in this progressive way. Oh my God, I need to see it. Yeah.
Well, it's awesome.
It's funny that they because I failed the confidence in me when they asked me to do this, because they gave me a script with a little premise about a guy trying to commit revenge on his father because he got abused when he was a child.
Sure.
And it was, I just added this labyrinthian element to it. Like,
yeah, I was going to say the core of what you did, but that's a very small piece you built out from that, you know, obviously.
Yeah. And the pimp and everything. And and I remember that. I remember the scene when the pimp is holding this the main actor, Didac Alcaraz, which is a guy I really love, when he grabs it from the neck and starts shaking him. And I remember having a laugh attack in the shooting. It's because it's like, okay, the thing is, Didac had his lines. Mm-hmm. And he got his lines in mind and everything. And then he has to keep acting even if the pimp is holding his neck and shaking him here this way, like he's making a cocktail with his head. And I remember like just laughing so hard, because it was like, okay, he's trying to act. He's still trying to act, even if this guy is shaking him. And it's like the best actor in the world, Anthony Hopkins, wouldn't be able to act if this guy is shaking his neck.
No, yeah.
Like, no matter who you are, no matter how great you are as an actor, if you're trying to act while this guy is shaking your from the neck, it's going to be ridiculous, and I love it.
Well, hey, we're running out of time, so I want to be respectful of your time as well. But thank you so much for chatting with us, Nacho. I'd love, as you got more projects come out, reach out anytime. I'd love to have you on my formal podcast and things on my website too. But I really enjoyed chatting, and I'm so excited to show this movie to the crowd here in the greater Philadelphia area, and I will promise to report back on the kind of reactions we get.
Oh, man, I love to. So curious. I would love to be there for sure. That's, I swear, that would be amazing.
If I had a budget, I'd fly you out.
Oh, yeah. And I need to work here too, so, yeah.
Hey, well, thank you so much, Nacho.
Thank you so much.
We'll definitely talk soon. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Take care.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye.